Because the mind is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities, it is naturally subjected to the transformation of lust and anger. In this way, it becomes attracted to material sense enjoyment. In other words, the mind is conducted by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There are 11 senses and 5 material elements, and out of these 16 items, the mind is the chief. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies among demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. When the mind is in a higher or lower position, it accepts a higher or lower material body. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Transmigration among the 8,400,000 species is due to the mind being polluted by certain material qualities. Due to the mind, the soul is subjected to pious and impious activities. The continuation of material existence is like the waves of material nature. In this regard, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Mayar Barshe Jatsu Dhese Khastu Habibidi Thayi. My dear brother, the spirit soul is completely under the control of Maya, and you are being carried away by its waves. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasar Ahankaro Vimudatma Kartahamiti Bhagavate. The bewildered spirit soul under the influence of the 3 modes of material nature thinks himself to be the doer of activity, which are in quality carried out by nature. Material existence means being fully controlled by the material nature. The mind is the center for accepting the dictations of material nature. In this way, the living entity is carried away in different types of body continuously, millennium after millennium. কৃষ্ণ ভুলি সেই জীব অনাদি বহির্মুখ অতএব মায়া তারে দেয় সংসার দুঃখ চৈতন্য চরিতামৃত. Due to the living entity's forgetfulness of Krishna, one is bound by the laws of material nature. Because the mind is absorbed in desires for pious and impious activities, it is naturally subjected to the transformation of lust and anger. In this way, it becomes attracted to material sense enjoyment. In other words, the mind is conducted by the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. There are 11 senses and 5 material elements, and out of these 16 items, the mind is the chief. Therefore, the mind brings about birth in different types of bodies among demigods, human beings, animals, and birds. When the mind is situated in a higher or lower position, it accepts a higher or lower material body. So here, Jara Bharat is instructing King, what's the name of the king? Rahugana, King Rahugana. Jarabharat, he was a very, very elevated personality, but he used to pretend that he was a fool. And he was pretending to be a fool because he was afraid that he might become recognized as a great personality and he might get a lot of honor and glory, and thus he may become attached to material nature. So he was pretending as if he was a fool, not only a fool of the highest degree. And this way he was trying to put Maya away. Because usually in the material platform, when one is recognized to be a great personality, then he gets a lot of name and fame. And this name and fame, in turn, gets into his head. Actually, the name and fame is also a trick of Maya. Maya tricks living entities mainly with three things. Maya attacks the living entity through dhanam, janam, and sundariyam. Dhanam means wealth, janam means name and fame, and sundariyam means beautiful woman. So these are the three things by which Maya makes the living entity attached to the material nature. So Jarabharat once learned the lesson. He was a king, not only a king, he was the king of the entire Bharatvarsha, entire earth planet, including the ocean. And at a very young age, at the age of 24, he gave up his kingdom. Such a successful person, he had practically everything that a man can ever dream of, and but still realizing the futility of the material nature, he gives up everything, his kingdom, his wealth, his name and fame, his wife, children, everything. And he goes to the forest to meditate upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then in the forest, he became attached to a deer. He saved the deer, a baby deer, right after the birth. The mother died, and King Bharat brought up the deer, and gradually, by the trick of Maya, he became attached to the deer. Maya took advantage of his attachment to the deer, and then he was, at the time of death, he was thinking about the deer, and thus he left the body. And so in his next life, he got a deer's body. He was born in a deer's body. But although he was born in a deer's body, his memory was intact. He was a Shritidhar. That means he remembered everything from his previous life. And then he became very upset that although he was trying so hard to meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord, but still he got carried away by material attachment due to his attachment to the deer, and that's why he had to take another body. So, and that also a deer's body. But although he was born in a deer's body, but still he, because of his remembrance of his previous life, he was living like a sentient person. He would eat only the dry leaves, and then when he grew up a little bit, he left his family, dear father, dear mother, and must have had dear brothers and sisters, and went alone to a place where the sages used to live. So in the association of the sages, started to live. And then when he left this body, the deer's body, in the next life he was born as a son of a Brahmin. And he was a very advanced, naturally a very, very advanced personality. But in this life also he carried his memory of his previous life, so he started to pretend as if he was a fool, because he would not be recognized. He would not allow himself to be recognized for the fear of becoming attached to the material nature. And then he was deceived. After his father died, he was deceived by his friend, by his other brothers, and then you know how he was caught by the dacoits and taken to be, was about to be slaughtered. But finally, Jarabharata's identity is became revealed when he came in contact with King Rahuvana. And so here we can see that how a Vaishnava is bestowing his mercy to a qualified person. The King Rahuvana was obviously very attached to the material nature. He was a king and he was pretty bewildered with false ego. But when he came in contact with Jarabharata, then through him he became self-realized also. And that's the wonderful aspect of coming in contact with a spiritual person, that as soon as we come in contact with a spiritual person, then immediately the knowledge is awakened in us, provided we are receptive, provided we are non-envious. Usually, people, those who are envious, they cannot really receive the mercy of a Vaishnava, a Mahatma, because their heart is so contaminated that Vaishnava's causeless mercy cannot act in their heart. And that's why one has to become receptive before he can receive the mercy. Vaishnava is giving his mercy to everyone, but only the fortunate one can benefit out of that. The unfortunate ones, due to their envy, cannot take advantage of that. And instead, they become more offensive. And that's why for a Madhyamadhikari Vaishnava, for a preacher, it has been instructed that he should avoid the offenders. The ones, those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they should be avoided. Why? Because when they come in contact with the Vaishnava, and the Vaishnava naturally begins to preach to him, because it's the natural tendency of a Vaishnava to sing the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so when he sings the glories of the Lord, then these people become very offensive. These atheistic people become more offensive. And then they start to blaspheme the Lord, start to blaspheme the Vaishnava. And thus, they become even more offensive. And thus, they lose the chance of making advancement towards spiritual direction. That's the reason why it has been instructed that one should avoid the envious atheists and the offenders. So, it is very important that for our own benefit, we become receptive to the mercy of a Vaishnava. If we can just be receptive, then it will flow constantly towards us. And thus we will become more and more aware of Krishna, more and more aware of the spiritual sky, and more and more aware of the benefit that we derive by being situated in the spiritual platform. Actually, spiritual life is, in one sense, it's very easy. But in the other sense, it's also very difficult. It is easy if we can become receptive, if we can become humble, then it is easy. But if our false ego, if our pride is still there, then it is very difficult. Because once we come in contact with the sadhus and the shastra and the guru, then our progress towards spiritual sky becomes a natural thing, provided we are willing to make that thing. That's why Prabhupada often used to put a lot of stress on discipline. Like in an army, a soldier cannot think for himself what he should do. He is directed by the general. The same way, a devotee should not think for himself what he should do. After he has accepted the spiritual path, he should be directed, he should be open to be directed by the sadhu, shastra and the guru. And if he does that, then automatically he will become victorious. In the material war, a soldier may be defeated. If his general is bad, and if his general loses the war, then he loses the war. And in that war, he may lose his life. But in spiritual war, there is no loss and there is no death. When a soldier takes to spiritual battle, when a living entity takes his, joins the army of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fight against Maya, then for him there is no defeat and there is no death. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna, his movement will be victorious over Maya. There is no doubt about it. But we have to simply follow the path. If the soldier deserts the army and runs away, then when the army becomes victorious, then he does not really benefit out of that. Because he left. He is not a part of the war. So we should not desert the army of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that we have joined, the movement that we have joined. We should be fixed up in that movement and we should be fixed up by remaining in this movement, remaining in ISKCON and following the instructions of the sadhu, shastra and guru. And then in due course of time, when Maya will obviously become defeated, Maya actually is defeated even before the war began. As soon as we step into the movement, Maya is immediately defeated. But we have to remain in the movement. That's the most important thing. And then in due course of time, Maya's defeat will become obvious. And when that happens, and then we also become glorified because we were a part in that war against Maya. That's why Prabhupada used to give so much stress on remaining in the movement. He used to say that no matter whatever happens, never leave the movement. Your love for me will be displayed by how you cooperate with each other. So these are the very specific instructions of Srila Prabhupada. And this way Prabhupada pointed out that if we just remain in ISKCON, our spiritual life is intact and we'll go back to God. Prabhupada even went to the extent of telling that even if you fall down, still do not leave the movement. Just remain in the movement. If you fall down and remain in the movement, then you'll become purified. Of course, that doesn't mean that we should fall down. No. We should try to remain fixed up. We should try not to fall down. But even if by chance one falls down, but if he is in the movement, he'll be rectified. But if you leave the movement, and no matter how pure you are, you won't be able to maintain your spiritual life. Your spiritual life will be doomed. And we are seeing that also. Like in our movement, there are so many big sannyasis, those who left the movement. But after they have left, what happened to them? They all have been swept away by Maya. At least I haven't seen a single person who maintains his Krishna consciousness outside of it. They may think or they may pretend that they are, but I have my doubts whether they are. And I've seen some stalwart sannyasis, those are very strict and very confident of themselves that they'll never fall down. And we see that they have fallen down. Even to compromise with Maya is a fall down. If somebody thinks that I will maintain the four regulative principles and chant, and that way I'll maintain my purity. But even that doesn't work, because if one compromises with Maya, then maybe right now he is not obviously fallen, but gradually Maya will grab him. And slowly, slowly Maya will make him think, well, there is nothing wrong with meat eating, there is nothing wrong with intoxication, there is nothing wrong with gambling, and there is nothing wrong with illicit sex. So Maya tricks the living entity very, very subtly. And as a matter of fact, the living entity doesn't have a chance against Maya, because he is so minute, so insignificant, that he and Maya is so vast, so powerful, that no living entity, especially in this age, no living entity, unless he is a Nitya Siddha, doesn't have a chance to stand against Maya alone. And that's why Mahaprabhu gave this movement, the Sankirtan Yantra, the collective congregational chanting, because living entity in this age doesn't have the ability to stand alone against Maya. In the previous ages, people were very powerful and they could leave home and take the spiritual life, and that life was more of an individual endeavor. One could either go to the Himalayas or even travel through the city instructing people, but they won't be carried away by him. But nowadays, we are very weak. We do not stand a chance. And Maya is very strong. So that's why Mahaprabhu gave this Sankirtan movement, a collective glorification of the Lord. And the advantage of this is that when we are staying together, then our combined strength is withstanding the onslaughts of mind. If I am alone, I may be weak, but if I am with five other devotees, then I am not weak. Then I have become strengthened by the association of the other sadhus. And that's why this Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement, and that's why this movement got a very specific shape through Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who made, here also we have to consider that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and started the movement 500 years ago, and when he came, the atmosphere in this world was not so polluted. Still, there was some purity, especially in India. And Mahaprabhu came with his associates and from the spiritual side, and those who joined his movement, they were already very advanced devotees, because unless and until one is very, very elevated, one could not possibly get to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is not that the people, those who came 500 years ago and got to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they came by accident and they got to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by accident, by chance. No. These living entities were advanced from the previous life, and they were advanced from the previous life. They were advanced from the previous lives, and that's why they got to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is not by accident. Gradually, when the living entity makes progress, then he gets a chance to be born at the time and a place where. The Lord performs his pastimes. And thus, by taking part in Lord's pastimes, they become advanced. But they even get a chance to go back to Godhead that way, by just taking part in the movement of the Lord. And so this way, the people, those who are with Mahaprabhu, they're all very elevated personalities. And actually at that time, the most degraded ones, Jagai and Madhai, were actually from the Vaikuntha community. So we can see that how advanced those people were. And so at that time, just by Mahaprabhu Sankirtan movement, everyone was inspired. And the whole, and the entire India was spiritualized. What to talk about entire India? Actually the whole world was spiritualized at that time. We can see that the whole world at that time was flourishing very wonderfully. Like Europe was obviously flourishing very, very nicely at that time. In Italy, the Renaissance began, and all over there was a big spiritual and material progress. And so, but the specific shape of this movement for this age was given by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He formed a society, a specific society, which was run collectively by the devotees. There's no question of even one being individually endeavoring for spiritual progress. He gave a specific shape that how collectively they should also manage the affairs of the spiritual movement. But unfortunately, that instruction of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not carried out after his departure. So that's why the whole structure fell apart. And then afterwards, Srila Prabhupada, the worthy disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, began this ISKCON, or he gave the shape of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's ideas. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's dream came true through Srila Prabhupada. And what Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's other disciples did not follow the instructions, Prabhupada gave those instructions as the principal criterion for the ISKCON society. So this is a wonderful creation of Srila Prabhupada. This is a wonderful creation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have to just remain a part of the society. Prabhupada said that this movement will be there for 10,000 years. And this movement will bring a revolution on this earth. This movement will establish Satya Yuga in the middle of Kali Yuga. So these are Prabhupada's predictions. Prabhupada also said that his books will be there for 10,000 years, which means that for 10,000 years, these instructions will become the law of the world. These books will become the law books of the world for 10,000 years. And this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself predicted that in every town and village, the holy name of the Lord will spread. And even 15 years back, no one could even dream of how that would be possible. No one could, even the Vaishnavas in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, could not believe that this would ever be possible. They thought it was just a way of saying, in every town and village of the world. But just, they did not have the faith that it would ever be possible. But that was the saying of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that was the prediction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And his prediction would not go in vain. And it has become true through Srila Prabhupada. So here we have to understand that Srila Prabhupada was not just an ordinary person who happened to have spread Krishna consciousness all over the world by accident. No. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must have sent his very, very intimate associate to fulfill his mission, to fulfill his prediction. So that is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy that Prabhupada came. And who is a very dear associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because naturally, in order to accomplish the greatest mission, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must have sent his most intimate associate. It cannot be that just Mahaprabhu predicted and by accident somebody just did it. Or Mahaprabhu, even when he sent somebody to accomplish that mission, he also would not send just any one of his associates. He must have sent his very, very intimate associate. And that is Srila Prabhupada. So this way you can understand what a wonderful personality, what a great personality came very recently. And many of us had a chance to directly associate with him. And all of us have the chance to directly associate with him through his instruction. And being a part of his society is coming. And this society will be there for 10,000 years, playing the most glorious role in spiritual practice, of the most glorious role to spiritualize the world. And that will happen according to the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't need us. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By his real, the innumerable universes are floating in the space. By his real, everything takes place on this earth. He can get everything done by his will. So he doesn't need us. But we need him. And here we are getting a chance to take part in his movement. And if we do that, then our life will become successful. There's no doubt about that. And that's why Prabhupada instructed that no matter whatever happens, just remain in the movement. And not remain in the movement just as a parasite, but remain in the movement by rendering service, being a valuable asset of the movement. Remain in the movement and render your service to the human ability. And if one does that, then it is guaranteed that his life will become 100% successful. So, now I think I just realized that I didn't really speak much on the shloka. So, actually, I was inspired to speak like that because this one shloka is giving the very essence of our philosophy. It's pointing out that how, because of the mind, we become attached to material nature. The living entity comes to the material nature due to his association with this material nature. As soon as the living entity comes in contact with the material nature, he immediately develops his self-ego. Because the material nature is the inferior energy of the Lord, and the living entity is the superior energy of the Lord. So, since it's the natural tendency of the superior to dominate over the inferior, the living entity, as soon as it comes in contact with the inferior material nature, he wants to lord it over. But this desire to lord over the material nature is his false ego. Like he has ego he has his ego, he has his identity. And that real identity or the real ego is that he is the servant of the Supreme Personality of God. But that ego becomes distorted by coming in contact with the material world. And instead of becoming the servant of the Lord, he tries to become the master of nature. And that is the false identity. He is never a master. He is a servant, but now he is thinking to be the master. So that is his false identity, or his false ego. And then he plans how he is going to enjoy this material nature. And he gets the second covering of intelligence. And then, through mind, his consciousness constantly flows towards matter. So this way, with mind, intelligence and false ego, he develops a subtle body. And then, in order to really enjoy the material nature, he gets a gross body made out of earth, water, fire, air and ether. So this way the living entity gets caught. And so out of these, the mind is the most subtle influence of the mind. Like through mind, his consciousness is running towards matter constantly. There's the internal sense, and mind receives all the dictations of mind. Do this, do that. In this way, Maya is just making him a slave. And so, Jarabharata is pointing that out to King Rahuvana. And then the mind becomes influenced by the different modes, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness. And this way the mode has been considered to be a rope. Material nature ties the living entity with three different ropes, or three different chains. A chain made of gold, a chain made of silver, and a chain made of iron. The mode of goodness is compared to the chain made of gold, mode of passion to that of made of iron, silver, and mode of passion, a chain of iron. In this way, the living entity is being dragged around by mind. So if the living entity wants to get rid of this material nature, then first of all he has to control the mind. And that's why the Lord has given the mantra. Mantra is a sound vibration that controls the mind, that subdues the influence of mind. And for this age, due to the mercy of Caitanya Mahaprabhu, we have received the Mahamantra, the greatest of all mantras. And that is the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And when we take shelter of the Mahamantra, then the mind automatically becomes controlled. If we sincerely take shelter of the holy name, then our mind will automatically be controlled. Then it won't run towards Maya anymore. It will run towards Krishna. And thus, being engaged in loving devotional service to Krishna, the living entity becomes free from material bondage. Hare Krishna. Is there any question or comment? Yeah, the first trick of envy is to think that I know better than everybody else. Yeah. Envy is actually the most acute manifestation of the false ego. So envy makes us feel that everything is meant for me. Yeah. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur defined envy as being happy and seeing others in distress and being sad in seeing others happy. That is a specific definition of envy. When you see others are suffering and we become very happy, oh, so wonderful that he's suffering. dragged down that way. And when you think that, when you see that others are enjoying, then when you become sad, that, oh, they are enjoying and I'm not enjoying. Actually, I should be enjoying and they should be suffering. So that mood is the envy. But a devotee, he should be happy seeing others' happiness, and he should be sad seeing others in distress. So that is the opposite thing to envy, is compassion. And so that's why we should, that's why Mahaprabhu gave the first, the first specific instruction in chanting the holy name. So on the third shloka of Ashishashtakam, Srinadopi Sunitena, Tadariva Shahishina, Amanina Manadena, Kirtanina Shadashi. Being very humble, so humble, as humble as a blade of grass. Being more tolerant than a tree, and giving all the honors to others and not desiring any honor for ourselves. So these are the signs of a Vaishnava. And when we develop this quality, then we become able to chant the holy name constantly. Because envy is the most abominable contamination of the heart. And when the heart is impure, the holy name does not become manifest in the heart. Heart is like the temple. And if the heart is dirty, if the temple is dirty, then the Lord will not come there. The holy name is the Lord Himself. And when our heart becomes totally pure, and then only the Lord will become manifest. Is it clear? Yes. Is there any more questions? Yes. Yeah. First of all, you have to understand that the holy name is non-different from Krishna. This is Krishna. The way the deity of Krishna is Krishna. Right? The same way the holy name is non-different from Krishna. So you have to, first of all, you have to have that understanding. Then we have to become free. We have to chant the name, being free from these 10 offenses. So it's actually a very simple instruction, but it's very difficult to practice. To chant offenselessly is the real thing. And it's true, like when it's like this Krishna syllable. Just Krishna, this is Krishna Himself. This is the holy name when we are chanting the name offenselessly. That is the time this name is Krishna. Right? But when you are chanting the holy name, when you are chanting offensively, then we are not chanting the holy name. We are chanting the syllables. And we, along with that, we are chanting our offenses. Yeah, we should chant without committing these offenses. Then we are chanting the holy name of Krishna.
Yes, the holy name.
I mean, if we think, if we blaspheme the Vedic literature and the literature, then only now, if we consider that these scriptures are not really scriptures, they're from fairy tales, not to have proper respect for the scriptures, which means that to think that they are some mundane literature. What do you mean? Oh. Yes, yes. Like, so for instance, Bhagavad Gita. If you have the understanding that these are the words of Krishna, and these are the words of Krishna for our benefit, all the instructions that Krishna gave to Arjuna there is for our benefit. Now, in spite of knowing that, if you do not act accordingly, like Krishna is telling Sarva Dharman Parishadjanami Paskaram. That's the final instruction. And in spite of hearing that instruction, if you do not follow that instruction, then obviously